This program is brought to you by the partners of A Rood Awakening International. Help others find truth. Support A Rood Awakening International today.
Over 3,500 years ago, the Israelites stood at the base of Mount Sinai, pledging their allegiance and love to Yehovah in a marriage covenant that would last forever. Then in 2023, in an unplanned event at that very spot, Miles Jones and his fiancée Catherine enacted their own marriage ceremony. And what happened next is truly miraculous. It's the end of the sixth day, the sun is set, and this is Shabbat Night Live. There you are. What a week. Shabbat Shalom, Torah fans. Welcome to Shabbat Night Live with Michael Rood. Hey, this episode is going to be so cool. You're going to love this. Yeah. Like a scene out of a movie, Yehovah showed up at a wedding at the foot of Mount Sinai last year, and we've got it on video. No kidding, because our guests were there. Not just there, but Miles Jones and his wife, Catherine, were the ones getting married. And our other guest, Patrick McGuire, was the guy who got it on video. It's incredible. You've got to see this to believe it. That's coming up in just a second. But before we do that, let's have a chat with the founder of A Rood Awakening International, Michael Rood. Welcome, Michael.
Oh, thanks, God. It's good to be here.
It is good to have you here. I'm happy you're up here. Now, you know, we've done a lot of stuff this last couple of weeks here with Patrick and with Miles and their expeditions to Sinai and all that's going on there with the city of Neom encroaching on the area and all this type of thing. But ironically, in all the years that you've talked about that, you know, Saudi Arabia was kind of off limits, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was dangerous to go there.
Yeah, and you never could go there. I mean, you talked all about...
Yeah, I tried twice to go there.
Oh, I didn't even know that. You did?
Yeah, I was in down south, and I tried to get in to Saudi Arabia, but I couldn't do it.
Well, I remember, too, in the... what was it... the Red Sea crossing, in the boat, when you jumped off the boat,
yeah,
that, and they didn't allow you even to get close to the shore there. You had to kind of stay off of it, didn't you?
Yeah. They have boats that are on the Red Sea, but they're not allowed to stop anywhere near there.
Ah.
Because it's off limits.
I wonder if that is changing even in the Red Sea now. And I'm glad to see that Miles and Patrick are, you know, Saudi Arabia is being a lot more friendly about having folks in there, and because they want to build this whole tourism thing with the city of Neom.
Yeah, they have gunships that patrol the Red Sea in the area. So it's dangerous.
Yeah, especially right now too with everything going on in Israel. That's probably not a friendly place to be right now. But so now you've been to some pretty interesting places yourself though with Sodom and Gomorrah.
That was an hour and a half south of my house.
Really?
Yeah.
So that wasn't too long.
I was there many times.
And you actually camped out at Sodom and Gomorrah?
Yes, out there with the lions.
That's crazy.
There are real lions out there.
Really? Like wild
mountain
wild
lions?
Cats. Really?
Yeah. We have the picture with the imprint of the lion laying down in the ash.
Mm. That's crazy. Oh, the ash of the Sodom and Gomorrah.
Sodom and Gomorrah.
So how did that, okay, so going there, that's how you actually know that this really was Sodom and Gomorrah. So there's still ash when that happened?
It's covered with millions of chunks of brimstone. And it only appears three places on planet Earth. And that is, you know, all three places are in Israel. Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboim.
And there were all the four cities that were destroyed. Everybody forgets about those last two.
Yeah. It's in the scripture though.
Yeah, it is indeed. And so when you go there and when people just see where this site is, they see what looks to be just cliff faces. It almost looks like Badlands or something like that. But is that what it is or is it something else we're looking at?
Yeah, you're really looking at buildings that have been incinerated to pure ash.
Hmm.
And so when you go out there, you can see it, and in the distance, it looks like just rock formations, but it's really the buildings.
Right, and that's because of in that area they used there were the tar pits, and they used that to make the walls. Right, so if you make tar to make your walls, and then brimstone comes down, that's going to light a fire.
It sets it on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are pits all near there, and it's all quicksand. Mm. So you have to be very careful. I wasn't careful once.
Oh, did you slip into something?
Oh, yes, I did. And I started to sink, and I got out of there fast.
Wow. So there's literal quicksand out there,
yeah.
too. Is it amongst the ash where you couldn't really see?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Now, in that ash, you brought home a few souvenirs, as I understand.
Oh, yeah. I have the largest collection of brimstone in the world. I keep it right here at the office, too.
Yes. And if you're okay with it, we'd like to distribute some of that to our Ambassador Club members.
Okay.
That'd be all right.
You can do that.
Okay. Yes. Well, there you have it. Okay. So at the bottom of your screen, we've got a special thing going on right now with the Ambassador Club members. If they donate a whole year's worth at once, Angie is sending them this beautiful bag with a copy of the Chronological Gospels in there, along with a couple of other things. And she also has some of your brimstone there. If you're okay with it, she'll throw some of those in.
Oh, well, that's really special.
Yeah.
Because I can't get any more.
No, that's right. I think it would be pretty hard to smuggle out of Israel. It was funny because I've seen that bucket around. It's literally a clear plastic tote in the office that's full of brimstone. That's hilarious.
Yeah. It was big trouble getting it here.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, they arrested me.
Oh, I didn't even know they went through that.
Oh, yeah. The people at the airport arrested me, and they kept my antelope skull, and and it was a big scene.
And why did they let you have the brimstone?
They didn't see that.
How could they miss it? There's a tub full of it.
Yeah, they saw the antelope skull, and so they were all excited about that.
Oh.
And they didn't even open the case with all the brimstone in it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, never mind all those rocks that proved the Bible from 4,000 years ago. That's nothing.
Yeah, that's not a thing to them.
Goodness. Okay, well, we're going to see more miraculous stuff tonight from Miles and Patrick. Here's what you're going to see.
Yeah, just read Exodus 19. That's exactly what was happening while we were there. Exactly the big wind, the cloud covering the top of the mountain.
That is crazy.
The shofar.
Yeah, you don't need to see it. Here's how it went down. It's right in front of you.
It certainly could have been, and we definitely, like Miles said, we're still living in that space.
Gosh.
And we're very pleased to bring this stuff.
And the rarity of that, though. I mean, like, I don't know if people saw the first episode. If you haven't seen it, you know, go back and see it. But, like, they get, what did you say, half an inch of rain a year?
They get half an inch of rain every 10
every
years.
Every 10 years.
So they get an inch of rain every 20 years. And this was like...
And you're sitting
like
there.
Like 100 years of rain going on there.
Yeah, literally. For like them. 100 years of rain, the torrent of, like, we saw the water spilling last episode.
Yeah.
And this happens a half hour after you get married at the foot of Mount Sinai.
I mean, like, immediate after.
All right, so there you have it. Over 3,500 years ago, the Israelites stood at the base of Mount Sinai, and in 2023, in an unplanned event at that very spot, Miles Jones and his fiancée, Catherine, enacted their own marriage ceremony. And what happened next is truly miraculous. Stay tuned for the incredible story right after the Kiddush with Michael. Meet us back here, 2 minutes. What does it mean to be a man? Is it what the world says? If that's true, why are there so many broken lives, broken homes, and broken spirits when men do things the world's way?
So many men will say yes when it's convenient. And then when it's time to cash in that yes, oh, it's too difficult. My wife's unhappy. I got a thing going on. No, you said you would be there.
In this month's Love Gift teaching, Biblical Manhood, survivalist teacher, firearms expert, emergency response instructor, entrepreneur, and servant of the Most High, Bear Independent, reestablishes the simple biblical model of what Yehovah expects of men in every aspect of their lives. This teaching is not available anywhere online, but we'll give it to you as our thanks for supporting A Rood Awakening International.
When you donate $50 as a love gift to this ministry in March, we'll send you Biblical Manhood with Bear Independent on DVD or Blu-ray. Donate $100 and we'll send you Biblical Manhood, plus a 40-ounce stainless steel insulated tumbler with encouraging verses from the Bible, plus a matching prayer journal. Donate $300 and we'll send you Biblical Manhood, the matching stainless steel tumbler and prayer journal, and a limited edition clay plaque, hand-painted in Israel, featuring pomegranate artwork and 24-karat gold accents. These gifts are a limited-time offer from Michael Rood to thank you for your support. Make your donation today and receive the $50 gift, the $100 gift, or the $300 gift. Thank you. Your donations ensure that important teachings like Biblical Manhood keep coming from A Rood Awakening International. Use your smartphone to scan the QR code on your screen to donate now and receive these limited-time gifts. Or call 888-766-3610. Or get your gifts online with a donation at monthlylovegift.com. If you like what you see on Shabbat Night Live, you'll love the bonus episodes, now available only on the MichaelRood.tv app. These bonus episodes dive deep to give you more serious study, cutting-edge content, and righteous raves you won't find anywhere else. It's Michael Rood Uncut. Sign up now to get the MichaelRood.tv app free for 14 days. It's everything Michael Rood, plus all new bonus episodes you won't find anywhere else. Sign up to watch now at MichaelRood.tv.
The Apostle Paul said that Yeshua nailed the dogmas, the doctrines and commandments of men, of the arche and exousia, that he overcame, that he nailed their commandments, their man-made dogmas, to the cross. And because of that, we are not to allow any of the arche and exousia, any of the religious authorities of men who made up their own commandments, to judge us. Because every one of the feasts of the Lord are prophetic shadow pictures of good things to come. So don't let any pagan, let no religious authority judge you concerning the Sabbath, the new moons. And on the Sabbath, we do not allow the world to judge us and tell us what to do. We know that Yeshua paid the price for us. And the last night he was with his disciples when he took the bread and he blessed the Most High with this blessing, Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu melech haolam hamotzi lechem min haaretz. He said, this represents my body, which is now broken for you. As often as you do this, you do it in remembrance of him. And then Yeshua took the cup and he said, this represents the renewed covenant in my blood. This is what this represents. This is what it's always represented. Do this in remembrance of me. And he said that prayer, Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu melech haolam v'rei pari hagafen. Blessed are you, Yehovah, our God, King of the universe, creator of the fruit of the vine. And he said, do this in remembrance of me, and don't let anyone disparage you. Do this until I come again, because I have made you priests and kings. Shabbat shalom.
Last time, we talked about the miracles at Mount Sinai, both 3,500 plus years ago, and more recently with our guests today, Dr. Miles Jones and Patrick McGuire. Welcome, guys.
Great to be here.
Now, yeah, you had good to be back.
Yeah, I'm glad to see this. I'd never seen this before. Patrick, you just handed me this before the cameras came on. This is something you had produced, the Writing of God study journal. And what I'm holding here is not even the final version now, because you added to this now. Mm-hmm. And apparently, when someone goes through this study guide and the course that y'all have, you can get 3 college credits for that? Is that right? Yeah. It's accredited now.
Yeah.
Through Remnant University.
Wow, very good.
Well, this is important because this is the means, the point of the spear by which the secular universities and such will attack our faith and the faith of our children, strip them of their faith, by convincing them that the Exodus never happened. It's just a myth. It didn't happen when Bible says it happened, or where the Bible says it happened, or the way the Bible says it happened. Well, all of that is false, and we have a mountain of evidence to prove, no pun intended.
kind of, sort
of. To prove that. No, there it is. We can show you exactly the chronology of the Bible is the correct one. Mm-hmm. Using scientific evidence, we can show you exactly how we know where the mountain is there. Obviously, the evidence is there, but there's a great deal of evidence. But this takes some study. But this is what every Christian needs if they want to be able to defend the Bible, because this is where they'll attack them,
right,
on the Exodus.
Exactly, because
they think
Mount Sinai,
they've got that down, that they can absolutely prove that that didn't happen.
Right,
and if they're
wrong. And if they can prove that didn't happen, then
what is that?
Who's Jesus?
Right.
Nothing.
What
nothing
does that say about the rest of the Bible? This story is inaccurate. Well, unreliable. What does that say about the message of the Bible and the rest of the Bible? Well, it must not be reliable either.
Well, we had looked last time some of the evidence, a lot of wonderful photos you'd shown us, some stuff that just by turning a corner in that area, we discovered new stuff.
Yes.
Like amazing things. And so now we want to continue that because we didn't get to finish. And there was a great story that I want to get Patrick to tell about the wedding, and we'll get to that. But first of all, what we're looking at here is what? Moses' altar.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we're at Moses' altar, and you're looking east, and you see the cattle, or the I don't know, corrals.
Well, yeah, they are corrals, they're stone corrals. These are beautiful pictures. You can see the cut stone columns of the 12 tribes there.
So here's Dr. Jones standing behind the four slaughter areas, or the altars. So where it says Moses' altar, that's the large one. So that's the first one. That's the one you would think would be where the bulls and you know, cattle would be. And then there's smaller, three or two?
Yeah, there's three.
Three more areas. And the Saudis actually did a drill down at one point to see what's going on. Why don't you tell them a little bit about that?
They did. You know, they drilled so that we have, someone has used a trowel. They did a core, and what they found were, they found organic material, which is material that's once alive, ashes, animal waste, and bones and things of that sort. Exactly what you'd expect to find at a sacrificial altar for animals.
Now, some people might say, oh, well, come on, that was just an ibis who died there a long time ago.
But well, they found them at all
really,
the altars.
Yeah, know. And like the ash really proves that, because there was something burned here, and it takes man to light a fire. And
well, they set themselves on fire, obviously.
yeah,
right.
Spontaneously combusting ibis.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting...
No, that's a good point, but this was done by... Saudi archaeologists, you know, so.
And what did they conclude the same thing you did?
No, they didn't. I think they've changed their mind now, but they didn't want this to be the mountain. So they said exactly the opposite, right?
What did they say?
And it was all fenced off. That whole part of the mountain's fenced off. Huh. But God removed that fence with a flash flood, and part of the fence is down, so we were just right up.
You said it was the foundations of a building, but what building has a foundation 4 feet apart?
Yeah.
How useful is that going to be?
Some kind of like ancient.
No, it wasn't.
Party.
It wasn't. It obviously was not the foundation of a building.
No.
It was exactly what we said it was.
Now, to put it in perspective, the burning bush was there. Okay, we couldn't find the ashes for that, but you know, the burning bush was there because
it was not consumed.
Because Jehovah told Moses to bring the people back to there.
He said that
To sacrifice. Okay, and then they were there for 18 months or so. This was a very functional sacrifice area. It wasn't just a one-time deal for 18 months. While they were building the tabernacle and all that, which was in the valley beyond, we believe, just east of Aaron's altar.
Right in between the two altars. You can see them. There's one is right across the valley from them.
Yeah, because building the tabernacle, we have to remember, that didn't That wasn't just an overnight thing either.
No, they had to have a kiln. They had to have, you know, they're making brass. They're doing silver. They're doing bronze.
There are the remains of kilns.
Gold.
Wow.
Yes, there are.
And our next trip, we will find them. and they have been discovered, but we want to know exactly.
And you will take the new road to get there.
Yeah, well, hopefully. The idea of going 3 hours from the hotel to get here each day was a lot of work. And, of course, you had to go back then.
Yeah, right? That's a long day.
All right, so this picture is just a bit from the side of where the bulls were, and you can start seeing, this was taken on the day of the wedding. You can see in the corner the team starting to gather.
The party goers.
The party goers. Here it is now from where the pillars are at the base of that, and here's a shot that I took off the video with Dr. Jones. Where at the pillars, and they're kind of scattered around there, but they're marble, worked marble. On all the everything else is natural stone fit together, but these are worked marble, and they're perfect 2.5 foot diameter. They're all the same size. Well, some are a little higher, but they're all basically
the circumference is about the same. Yes, but the height is not always.
And then there's some other rocks that maybe have been platforms or something. And so this is a rock that we actually could hold in our hand. And the next slide is the pillar. And then this is where we're planning the wedding. And then this is us. Okay, so this is where I want to stop and tell you a story, if that's okay.
Please do, yes. We've been waiting a week to stop now, so.
Okay, so we are going through the Ketubah, which is basically Exodus 19 to 23. And this is where we are.
It is a wedding ceremony between Yehovah and his chosen people.
And so we're reenacting this, okay?
That wasn't planned either.
It wasn't planned. We went just to a wedding, but this Art got a little carried away and really went with it. And
Team wanted to participate in it too.
Yes,
so they wanted to be part of agreeing to do this marriage with Yehovah.
And as it turned out, we also reenacted that covenant with the Lord. And as we're doing this, I'm like, and people are starting to kick off. You can see some of them are already got their shoes off and bare sock feet anyways. And I'm thinking, it's starting to hit me. You know, I mean, I've been working this whole time, but you know, you're pausing now and the Spirit's just started giving me this image of, yes, the whole body was there of the remnant, as well as what they call the
mixed multitude.
Now, what's that? It's a mixed multitude. I'm sure the slaves said, "This is our ticket. Let's get out of here. We're gonna go. We're gonna go with Moses because Pharaoh's not. It's not working." And so they took off. They did the Passover. They did everything, and they came and they went through the sea, which is a idea of baptism, or you know, being separated to the Lord. And so this mixed multitude is standing there too, and they're saying, "We will do this. You will be our God. We will do your covenant, right?" And we're doing the same thing now. And it just hit me. This is when the first Gentiles were grafted in to the tribes of Israel. And actually, if you look in Numbers, where the different tribe sizes, you know, numbered out, and you notice how small Levi is. And I always tell my studies, he says, that's because no one wanted to be grafted into, they're not going to get any land. their possession, and they weren't able to get into to Levi. But it hit me that, wow, this is really, I mean, the Spirit of God is really moving, that now we're new covenant people there, reenacting the same thing, and I think it pleased the Lord.
That's first. Yeah.
And that's the first. I mean, when we say this is the first in 3,500 years, because no one could. And then the last 2,000 years, really, no one's known about it. Since Paul was out there, that was pretty much it. And so that's why this archaeology is all over the place. and it's hard to get to, but soon it will be open. But I'm like, wow, okay, Lord, this is real. Mm-hmm. And I've been kind of in that space now since then. Mm. And every time I'm editing or working with this stuff, which I've been doing since March, I'm reminded of that. You know, wow, yes, we are grafted into these people. These are our ancestors. And God's intention was for all people to come to the knowledge and saving knowledge of Yeshua. And wow. to come in covenant with him.
Yeah.
So
and it just happened at that place. It right. was reenacted in a church somewhere.
I know.
And it at Mount Sinai.
And then
it's amazing.
30 minutes later, the storm answers. Happens and all that stuff.
God answers. And the our people were saying, he heard us, he heard us, he heard us. And he's responding. It's clearly a response from him.
Wow.
And the whole weight of it is still sinking in. I think it'll be sinking in for the rest of my life. To be honest,
Amen.
You know, what happened there, what transcribed there. But we were right on the cusp of change, right?
And things are changing in the Middle East right now,
yeah.
aren't they?
Yeah.
So here, this photo, I'm going to go through a little quick sequence. So as we're eating, and I did lock down my shot to get that time lapse, but just a quick in slides, you can see that these are starting to roll in. And then pretty soon, the whole mountain look at those clouds over that mountain there. And then the mountain starts disappearing because the clouds come down over it. Mm-hmm. And there's thunder, there's lightning, and then there's rain and hail.
It's like you're watching the movie
wind.
Of the actual, like, it, of the...
You're pinching yourself.
It's almost, it's really almost not even a movie. It's like going back in time and actually being there when it happened, because here's the stuff in front of you.
Yeah, just read Exodus 19. That's exactly what was happening while we were there. Exactly the big wind, the cloud covering the top of the mountain.
That is crazy.
The shofar.
Yeah, you don't need a movie to see it. Here's how it went down. It's right in front of you.
It is incredible.
It certainly could have been, and we definitely... Like Miles said, we're still living in that space. And we're very pleased to bring this stuff.
And the rarity of that, though. I mean, like, I don't know if people saw the first episode. If you haven't seen it, you know, go back and see it. But, like, they get, what did you say, half an inch of rain a year?
They get half an inch of rain every 10
every
years.
Every 10 years.
So they get an inch of rain every 20 years. And this was like...
And you're sitting
like
there.
Like 100 years of rain going on there.
Yeah, literally. For like 100 years of rain, a torrent of, like we saw, the water spilling last episode.
Yeah.
And this happens a half hour after you get married at the foot of Mount Sinai.
I mean, like immediate after.
With 12 witnesses.
But yeah.
Good night. Wow.
Well, we couldn't have planned it.
Nope.
And we had more people, but their number of people decided to go a different place.
Ended up being 12 at that point.
That is absolutely insane. So where do we go from here?
Well, we're going to go around to the other side of the mountain. It's still the same mountain, Mount Sinai, but on the west side of the mountain is the Split Rock. And so we're going to go there. Mm. And
this is where many of the inscriptions were actually found.
Oh, really?
Some were found at the base of Sinai, but many others were found at Rephidim, a lot of the footprints.
See, I think maybe, I don't know how many other people assume this as well, but I always think, well, where the Golden Calf is and Mount Sinai, that's where everything is. And then there's not much anywhere else.
Yeah. No. This Rephidim is where he first told them to write.
Mm.
Right? And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing actually the first literate act of the Israelites when they traced the footprints and put the alphabetic caption beside them, the triple hash mark, which is the Kaf.
The Kaf, I was going to say. Is that
which
the Kaf?
Literally means the palm of our hand, the sole instep of our foot, and of course it is now the name of the letter.
And they did,
the
for those K. who don't know, why would they trace their feet? What was the reason?
Well, they were commanded to in Scripture. Wherever your footsteps shall be, wherever you trace your footsteps, that will be your territory. So it's a territorial thing. It became their wasm, their tribal sign.
And that plays into something that Michael always says. Michael's in the studio with us here today.
Hey,
from
Michael.
From the river
to the sea.
To the sea, right?
Well, yeah. To the river, to the river.
Haven't we
the
heard
river,
that to the river. Somewhere?
No, that's something else.
That's so different. From the Nile to the Euphrates.
The Nile to the Euphrates.
But that was the first deed to Abraham's seed right there.
Right. And that covers, guess what? If you look on a map, that's Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
The whole dang thing.
And
all the oil.
Bunch more.
And all the oil.
And all the oil, and all the riches that come with it. I mean, why wouldn't God promise that to his people? He knows what's underneath there.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of behind the scenes as we're getting there. So this first shot is quite common. This is a huge vista. It's the most beautiful mountains I have seen anywhere in the world, and I wished I had more copies of this, of different photos. But here is our expedition. We don't need no roads.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Yeah, and so we've got...
I'm gonna go back in time here.
We've got 11 of these guys going as fast as they can across the desert. They're kind of racing with each other. It was, you know, I don't know if we were behind schedule or whatnot. I'm trying to shoot video and it's like all over the place.
No, I think they were just driving insanely.
They're just trying to scare the Americans.
I think they were driving normal.
They think it's normal.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, there's no roads here. There's just this little path, you know, and what about this wash? But you can see these trees. What kind of trees are these? These are acacia trees.
That's what they made the ark out of.
Wow.
And they made the poles to carry the ark out of the acacia tree. And some of these are very tall, skinny. To make that, they made their tents out of it. They made the ark out of it. It's a very tree. And then we get to this canyon, so we're just going. And it's hard to tell the perspective. You can see the tree and how tall that is. And we found taller canyons. But then we finally get to the rock at Horeb. Mm-hmm. And this, you think of a rock, you know, it's just a little boulder thing, right? No. This is like 6 stories high.
Yes, it's huge. It's huge.
And
it takes quite a while to climb up that. He'll do about half an hour.
And it's just this weird outcropping that's in the middle of nowhere. As you can obviously see on the photo, it's just this, it's almost like God went, here, we're going to put this here.
Here we are. And it's kind of conspicuous. I mean, there's not other places where there's a big boulder sitting on top of a mountain of boulders.
Right.
This is it.
And it had to be from a high space for it to flow down. Right.
Right. Yeah, because there is.
It would just pool if it were.
Well, this next photo that I'm going to show you kind of shows that erosion. Mm-hmm. And back behind there is a valley. There's another valley in the next photo. But you can see the erosion that's coming down there. Now, this is a shot that Ben got from the drone. Because I couldn't climb up this high to shoot that.
And from an archaeological point, not to cut you off, but so when people see this and they say erosion, oh, come on, there's lots of wind out in the desert. That's not water erosion.
Well, there's a difference between heat erosion and wind erosion and water erosion. You can tell the difference.
Okay, so this is obviously what kind of erosion then?
Well, this is water erosion, but here's the point. Glenn Fritz, who is a geographer and geologist, he took satellite photos and discovered there is a fault line that goes right through that. And it goes down, there's an aquifer. They do get water off the Red Sea. It falls on one side of the mountain and goes into the aquifer. So that aquifer, if you like rationalistic explanations, that aquifer could be tapped by Yehovah and the water come out. Yeah. Well, he can do it any way he chooses. He can produce rock from a stone if he chooses to. But in this case, there is a fault line. There is an underground aquifer there. So water could come right up through that fault line that goes right through.
Well, it makes sense. It wasn't some little trickle. I mean, we're talking about millions of people and millions of livestock that needed to have water. Mm-hmm. So this had to be gushing. Mm-hmm. I mean, and like you said, there's a lake bed there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, think of the spiritual side of this.
But this is definitely water erosion.
Right there, Miles and Catherine and Benjamin are at the very bottom of that broken area.
And split.
And you can imagine Moses standing beside that and hitting that, and got the elders standing there, and all of a sudden that whole thing just starts breaking and coming loose. I think Tim Mahoney did a nice job of animation in his piece when he was talking about that. Mm. Here I am.
Pointing to the rock.
Pointing to the rock. I mean, I had a torn meniscus, so I wasn't doing a lot of climbing.
Did you speak to the rock, though?
I did not.
I took a staff up just in case.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, hold that thought. We're going to come back in just a second and talk more about this. Thank you guys for bringing this. We got a lot more to talk about, so hang on a second. You guys hang on, too. Thank you for bringing these guys here. Your donations made it happen. Now people in the future will be able to see this thanks to you. Thanks for doing it. We're going to give you an opportunity to do more of it right now. Thank you. Thank you for supporting this program. You are helping get other people educated about what is real and what is not, and dispel all the falsehoods. We've talked last segment about the water erosion that is not, cannot be dismissed as wind erosion. So we were at the Split Rock, and now we're going to continue our journey.
You can argue anything, but there's an aquifer beneath that fault.
There you go.
That fault line in the Split Rock.
You want evidence? There it is. There's geological evidence.
Yep.
So we return to the Split Rock, and this is our team. We're just kind of briefing. What are we going to do now? Because we're going to go around the other side of the Split Rock to this whole bluff that's there in what we call Rafidim. And that's where we find just a ton of these inscriptions of the sandals and that sort of thing. And when we get that's over there, they're starting to make a road again. And there we have a grader, and these guys are like, what are you guys all coming? Because we went around their blockade and everything. We're going up here. And and so we're there, we're starting to shoot our stuff. And at the top of this, if you look straight up, you can see the backside of the Split Rock up there. See it?
Mm, yes, okay.
Okay. I should have circled
right
that,
at the center of the screen there at the top.
Almost the center, yeah.
Like, it looks like a cone right at
the top. It almost looks like the cone head or something. and so from there, just turning around, there is Rafidim, okay? Mm-hmm. And so they could have, that part of that's a lake bed. It could have been the whole thing a lake bed, but likely part of it was, and they camped around it because it's easy camping there. I mean, it's nice and level and whatnot. And the first thing one of the first things we found right off where the road was an ayin. Mm-hmm. Tell about
this
that.
This is an ayin, but it's got an eyebrow over it. It comes from an Egyptian icon, the Eye of Ra. But this would not be Ra. This would be the all-seeing eye of Yehovah.
Okay.
Because it's got an eyebrow on it. Ayin means eye.
So people say, how do you get that? All I see is a circle carved in the rock.
Well, there are better pictures of it. But the thing is, this was at various places in the rocks. Mm. And if you've got a symbol that's being drawn in various places, there's a reason for it, you know. And it comes from the Eye of Ra, which has an eyebrow right over it. So this means eye. It's got an eyebrow. It is the all-seeing eye of Yehovah.
Mm. And the letter Ayin.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. This is the letter Ayin, which means.
Is there any correlation? This is sort of a left field question, but is there any correlation to that, to what we see on our dollar bills with the pyramid and the all seeing?
Is that the eye of Ra? The same one.
Oh yeah. My goodness! Yeah,
right. It's a little difficult taking a rock and trying to make a circle.
Yeah,
that is probably one of the more difficult things to do when you're carving into a rock.
Yeah, they tend to become straight lines when you're writing on rock. Mm. When you get on paper and stuff, those tends to become curved again, you know. So
now here's a little bit more artistic sandal.
Boy, look at that.
Very well done.
You can see
probably
the
very
sandal
sharp
straps too. See the sandal straps,
yep.
Mark of the mm-hmm. sandal straps.
And then the toe thing as well. That one was new. We hadn't seen
it. I was going to ask if anyone had seen that one before, because before, the ones I'd seen, were the outline was more... it was wider.
This looks like this a very...
Like that one there. And
yeah,
this, you can see the triple hash mark. That's the alphabetic inscription, which is the kaf, which literally means the soles of our feet. And because it's derived from the glyphs. Now, this is the first takedown of it. In other words, you're seeing language development in process here. Hmm. It's too hard to draw the whole picture. So they just do... the instep of the foot, like the curved line over there with the three hash mm-hmm. marks against it, and that means, and then they simplify it even further, which we have on
now. There. When you were measuring that, so you did that with purpose. So
we're documenting those.
So these were people's feet. I mean, they literally put their foot down.
Exactly.
You probably decide what size
and plates and trace their feet wherever your footprints show. Right.
So the average Israelite had what, 9.5?
10? Yeah, there you go.
Could be.
And
no, they were about right.
And that's pretty laborious. So they started doing a shortcut. And so right there, that picture is the doctor pointing it out. This is on the ridge separating this area, lake bed, to the other area. And then this is a close-up of the same.
We found tons of these. They would just do the triple hash mark.
So
because it means soles of our feet. See, that's the whole idea. They went from... iconography there, making icons, breaking it down to a simple symbol that means the soles of our feet. Mm. So, and that's much easier to write. So you're seeing language development of the script happening right there before your eyes. And these are the first literate acts of the Israelites right here.
Wow.
Tracing and placing their footprints with the icon. Because remember, you don't do graven images. So they're putting the icon in there to show, this is not a graven image, these are the soles of our feet, as we were commanded to do, right?
Got you.
Wow. So I put a little 2-minute video together of just slides of varying things that we found there.
And you're going to tell us what these are?
And we'll narrate that.
Okay.
So I told you that one of the big things we're looking for, we saw, we had a few, a handful of maybe 3 or 4 footprints. Were there more? Because there are a lot of people. Were there more? And there were. So we found tons more footprints and the triple hash marks, which means the footprint. So, and we found all kinds of other inscriptions. This one may say rest in peace. Some of them we were not able to decipher or have not been able to decipher yet. These are the triple hash marks that they end up making in place of tracing their whole footprint. And you see them all over.
And they're only a few inches wide. These are not huge things.
No, they're not huge. But they're all over the rocks there, and this is their footprint.
And it's consistent.
Yeah, this is consistent.
There's an ion.
That's a Teletubby, I think. I'm sure. So you see it. You just see a lot of them all over the place. So both of their feet print, right? So one footprint, another footprint.
It's amazing. It's like seeing a museum in plain sight. It's sitting there right for you to see.
Right. And these are really significant, like I said. He told them to write at Rephidim, and they're writing. You know, that's where he first commanded them to write.
Several hash marks there, but they're all consistent. It's very
pretty
very
much,
similar.
Yeah. Sometimes you get 4, but you know, some people have more toes.
Right? Wow. And what is that on the right?
That would be probably a cattle motif.
Okay. And this here?
That's a tav.
Oh, okay.
Which has been a universal mark forever and ever.
So these are all, and that thing on the right.
Yeah, that would be a bait probably.
Okay.
And that would be a tav, if they were intending to write a letter.
And here it looks like we have a person in the middle?
Yeah, we do. Now see, there's the Eye of Ra right there.
Oh, okay.
But you find more of them around.
But that one was really good, and that was only 8 feet away from the road.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. We had everybody scanning the whole area looking for these, and this is the one we saw before. So Peep got a really good workout climbing through the rocks to find these, but I'm glad we had all those people that were willing
and
to
all come. Of these are about the size of an adult foot.
Yeah, okay.
These are.
That's
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Wow.
So when you say, well, why 3?
Yes.
Right? Well, 1, 2, 3.
It was an inverted bowl with 3 hash marks for the fingers. Okay. So that is the palm of the hand.
Okay. Makes sense. Sure.
So that the word, the kaf, actually means the palm of the hand and the sole of the foot. It actually means the cup, kaf, the cup of the hand, or the cup, you know, the instep of your foot is like a cup too.
So that is the actual paleo inscription for kaf.
Yes, it is. And you can look it up in Strong's 2706, in fact, and it'll tell you the palm of the hand, the sole of the foot.
Hmm. Now, what's interesting is when we go back to the Proto-Hebrew, where we start, you know, going back to Joseph area, it's more pictorial, right? Well, what did God write with his own hand, his own finger? It says he wrote the tablets with his own finger. And the second commandment, I believe, is do not have a graven image.
Right. Do not bow down and worship them, right?
And people were worshiping these hieroglyphics up until about 7,500 years ago when they finally figured out what they said.
Probably still are.
And they're still figuring them out. But so God did he did the Kodak, if you may, on the tablets of now we're going to do symbols for these sounds.
Yeah. Mm.
So there's symbols now. That's what's important about what we're seeing there and we're documenting is they're starting to experiment now with just the symbols instead of the pictures.
This is the beginning of the alphabet as we know it.
Okay.
This is the first alphabet, and it was given to us on tablets of stone, written by the finger of God at Mount Sinai. And that's what the people are imitating.
So that's what's interesting about where we were. This is where the alphabet started. Mm-hmm. This is significant. Significant stuff happened there. Mm-hmm. Now, and I went there with the idea, look, this is the place. Okay, mm-hmm. Now let's find out what's happening there. What happened there? What is there? What actually happened there? And almost every day we're beginning to unpeel that onion of stuff. And it'd be great to be able to go there for a month and start really exploring. We only had five days. We're going back next March, God willing.
I'll bet that you've seen these photos and you start editing and you look at them and you're looking at them over and over and over again because you're editing. I mean, have there been times where you went, wait a minute, I never saw that before?
Well, yeah, I never saw the all-knowing eye of Ra before. I'd seen the symbol mm-hmm. in a longer inscription, and we've showed those longer inscriptions here, and they speak of events that come straight from the pages of Exodus. So I'd seen that, and I always wondered, what is that over the Ayin? It looks like an eyebrow, and then we start seeing them all over the rocks there, and I put two and two together. Because I'd already figured out it probably came from the all-seeing eye of Ra, except in Hebraic form.
Yeah. And I'm sure you'll see, like I say, even if you take the photos of what you think it is, and then you'll look at it again, and you'll probably see something else eventually, too, that you've never even realized.
Well, that greater shot where we saw the backside of, we didn't see that. I just saw that in that still photo just a few days ago. Wait a minute. We know we drove around, but that's it. It's right there. And some of the younger guys went climbing up on and to explore where we could find more. But on that ridge, because there is some darkened stone there, so to be able to to write on, there's more of that. But they're all over the place.
Yeah.
It's almost like a minefield or something. And I kind of wonder if maybe that's where the troops were when the Amalekites came, and they because it's a perfect almost a land dam. Kind of thing going across there between these two big, huge valleys. And the Israelites could have been camped all around the rock, not just in front of it. Matter of fact, behind it there where Rephidim is a better camping area, more level, that type of thing.
From what you saw, and we know the numbers of Israelites that were out there, is it quite plausible you look at this plain and go, oh yeah, several million people could camp out here?
Well, you look at it and you
plenty of room.
It had to be God.
Yeah.
It had to be God. I mean, their clothes didn't wear out or anything, but just feeding and watering, even if it was only like 30,000, would still be a major miracle. Huge. So when you multiply that out to 1.5 million or whatever, that's God sustaining them in that wilderness, without a doubt, even though it was probably more wet and more lush. But after 1 million people, they're cutting down all the trees and doing sacrifices and whatnot.
It was wetter, for sure.
Well, you have to think about it, even like, so Charlotte, where we are here, there's approximately 1 million people that live in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's feeding Charlotte every day for 40 years in the middle of nowhere.
Watering them.
With no access really to anything.
Right.
And water too, exactly. Mm-hmm. Wow. And you think of humanitarian efforts just in terms of a hurricane comes or something like that. And what a feat it is just to find shelter and food and clean water for maybe a few thousand, but 1 million.
Yeah.
Every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. It had to be.
Easily with their animals and everything.
It's supernatural.
There are tons of people. It is supernatural.
And they were drinking of supernatural water, I think. Mm. And certainly eating from the supernatural manna. It's mind-blowing.
And think of the whole picture that you have. You have God giving us writing at Sinai and commanding us to write, and you see it on the rocks. They fought the Amalekites there, and we have an inscription, died Amalek, along with the the inscriptions.
And that was found in
of
that
Hagar
place as well?
And her daughter Amaya. They were found at the base of the mountain.
So how can anybody doubt this place? I mean,
there's
you
so
see
much
all
evidence.
Of this.
It's right. The story is right there in Scripture, and then you see it in the rocks at Sinai. I mean, you know, it talks about Amalek. An Amalekite died here where he killed Amaya, Hagar and her daughter Amaya. And you see he tells them to write there. He gives them the writing of God. These people don't have any writing. He gives it to them on the tablets of stone. And now they're writing. They're writing on the rocks all over the place.
It's almost like practice. It's like
it is like practice. You're seeing the first literate act of the Israelites, and it's all there.
Like Michael said, literally, the rocks are crying out. This is a way in which the rocks can cry out.
It is, right, because remember what I said? This is what they're using to separate you from your faith, that Mount Sinai, the Mount of God, is a myth. Well, the rocks are crying out and saying it's not.
Yeah.
And
right
I
here.
Think that we can, one of the things that we want to do is to follow the trail of the basically the Israelites graffiti, but you know we look at
their footprints.
We look at the idea of that they were sentenced to 40 years in the wilderness, right? That was a negative, okay. But at the same time, God was raising up the first literate nation.
Yeah.
Mm. So that group that went with Joshua into the land were literate people.
So
for the
Egypt,
first time.
Egypt was not a literate nation.
No.
They peaked out maybe at 10% literacy, it is estimated, but that's not much.
Mm.
Whereas the Hebrews and the Greeks later on had as much as 50% in the urban areas sort of thing. You know.
But for the common man now, for the entire tribes,
that was a massive
different.
Step forward.
And God commanded, you teach your children, write it on your doorposts,
yeah.
You know, write it, write. Wow. And this is the first time that any God, if you think about it, told the people what they wanted.
Mm. Yeah.
You see, all the pagan gods, they don't. You don't know how to please them at all. And you never can because the goalposts keep changing.
Mm. That's true.
But our God, Jehovah,
specifies exactly
He writes it in stone.
You do this, I'll do this, and this for you.
And it was the beginning.
That's important because the covenant is a contract between us and Him, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we do the things He asks us to do, He will definitely do the things He promised He would give us. Mm-hmm. And He did exactly that to the Israelites. He gave them, you know, houses that they didn't build and vineyards that they didn't plant. And He gave them a land that they didn't pay for. They conquered it. And He gave them all of that, exactly as He had promised.
Mm. So, think about it. The first book was published at Mount Sinai.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a good way of thinking about it.
And, no, it is.
And so God is showing us in the Torah how to approach Him, mm-hmm. how to please Him, but also how to eat, how to sanitation, all that stuff. Was there. It was discipling a nation right there. And it began at Mount Sinai, continued in the wilderness, and then went into Israel.
And now we're finding all of that alphabetic writing that we see. We can follow it from Goshen to Mount Sinai, now into the Promised Land at Joshua's altar. They have found tablets with the same alphabet on it.
Mm. So now there's evidence of this same thing.
Yeah.
To connecting the dots of footprints of the Israelites.
The human how-to, if you will. There we go.
All the way from Egypt into the Promised Land.
Wow.
It's all there now.
Can you guys come back next week?
Yeah, okay.
I think we have more to say here. I mean, from what I see, obviously there is more. All right, so thank you guys for joining us. Thank you for supporting this program. Thank you for making it happen. There's more to come next week, so gather your friends, gather your family. If they haven't seen anything so far, get them on the next one, because this is going to be spectacular. Until then, we will see you next week. Shavua Tov and Shabbat Shalom.